On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Neither party's agenda really aligns with who its coalition is today.
It was the dumbest speech I have ever seen in my life of covering politics.
When people walk into a voting booth, at the end of the day, they do say, I really should vote for someone smarter than me.
I'm Warren Altney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It was just 2 years ago that I met my guest, Ryan Coogler, at the Sundance Film Festival, where his film Fruitvale, which later became Fruitvale Station, became the sensation of the year, winning prizes at Sundance and Cannes and every place you want to name, except for a place I should have won, but that's another conversation. Anyway, his newest film as writer-director, and this is the first time I ever met a director who said, this is what my next film is going to be, and it ended up being his next film. His new film is Creed, which is his continuation of the Rocky stories. First of all, Ryan Coogler, what a pleasure to have you back, man. Thank you.
It's great to be with you, Elvis.
And I remember you told me that. You told me that we were walking through the Kubrick exhibit at LACMA. You said, this is my next joint.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you knew what was going to happen then, didn't you?
Yeah, around that time, we knew that it was looking like it was going to happen. It wasn't like set in stone at that point, but it was getting close to there. And I was, you know, I was really, really excited about it, man. I told you to get your reaction. You know, like you know, we walking through a Kubrick exhibit. You know what I mean? We talking cinema. You know, and I remember when I told you, your reaction was really cool, because you said, well, you know, the first Rocky was basically like an independent film, you know, and you went on about how much you loved the first one, man, which was really cool, and I was exciting.
So basically, I was your first test audience.
Yeah, definitely.
Except you said at that point, because I remember I said this to you. You said at that point it's going to be Creed's grandson. I said, should it be his son?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. It was something that you were right. You know, it's something that the first time you wrote the draft, the character, his name was Aeneas, not Adonis, and the character was much younger. You know, and he was Apollo's grandson. But after a few drafts, we tightened it up and got it what I think to be what it should be.
So would you say it's the story of Apollo Creed's son, basically the son he never met, Adonis?
Yes.
How'd you choose the name Adonis for this?
Oh, well, I mean, it was really like he was Aeneas for a while, and then we were in a meeting where somebody said, you know, Aeneas is hard to say, you know, especially internationally. so I thought about it, and I said, you know, it is kind of a tongue twister of a name, you know, and we would have conversations, and people would always, especially like older people that we were working with, like we were working with Irwin Winkler, and everybody
who
said,
was the original producer?
Yeah, everybody said Aeneas different. Like, it was Aeneas, and it was, you know, so I knew it was an issue. You know, it was something that we were thinking about, but I knew that his last name would be different from Apollo's, because that was a big part of who the character is, in that, you know, we wanted his first name to have some kind of tie, like be some kind of nugget of who his dad was, and we settled in on Adonis, which was kind of like do we really name this kid Adonis, who's going, like, we know, like, Mike's going to be in good shape and all this good stuff, but then it was like, man, what if you growing up with your name being Adonis, like, that'll really suck, you know, so it actually ended up being perfect.
I have no idea what's like to be a black person with a weird name, but
no, you know all about it. Like did you get teased a lot?
Let me put it this way. Yes, I did.
And it puts a bit of a chip on your shoulder, right?
Wait, what you talking about? Let's go outside and tell us right now. What kind of chip are you talking about?
Because you was in Michigan, right? Mm. You was in Michigan, 90 of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, why do you think I'm here now? Anyway, enough of this. So one of the things that's really interesting about this story, again, picking up with, it's a son that Apollo Creed never knew he had, played by Michael B. Jordan. What I think kind of links this for me a little bit to Fruitvale Station is a relationship with a mother figure.
Mm-hmm.
And looking for, pushing back, but also looking for approval. And that's
absolutely
something that you did in Fruitvale Station, and you do it here with Felicia Rashad.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, we're looking at women who are single mothers. You know, and the character in Fruitvale, you know, was Wanda Johnson, who's you know, the father of her son, and that was incarcerated and still is to this day. You know, so Oscar very much never was alive when his father was not incarcerated.
That was Octavia Spencer in that film.
Yeah, exactly. So you're in these situations where you have a single mom, and she has to be loving, but she also has to be the hammer. You know what I mean? No matter how difficult that is, you know, you see single mothers become incredibly strong and develop very complex relationships with their sons. And what you see in this film with the relationship between Michael B. Jordan's character and Felicia Rashad's character is that same thing. You know, she's raised this kid, you know, by herself, and he's not her biological son, but he's her son nonetheless. She's very much his mother, and you see the scenes between them are complicated. You know, where she loves him very much, but she's not approving of what he's trying to do, and she doesn't hesitate to let that show.
It's also too. In both these films, and your shorts as well, we can say, this idea of a young man of color fighting the institution and what institutions can do. And this is by clearly Adonis's character, or I should say Michael's character. Adonis has been in and out of institutions his entire life.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we meet him, and he's still very much scarred from all his experiences. It's not something he talks about through the film, but it's something that Mike and I talked about, you know, a lot. And even Sly, because Sly sees...
That's Sly, your friend Sylvester Stallone, the star of the original Rock. He was in this.
Yeah.
Your friend Sly, more about that.
Yeah, no, but Sly also saw Rocky as someone who was scarred at a young age, you know, by his relationships with adults, by the institution, by his circumstances. And I think that though it's unsaid, you know, it definitely reflects on who Adonis is as a character and the choices that he makes, you know, in the film.
He's also, too, somebody who's really quick to anger. I mean, and you talk about a chip on his shoulder. So we get to see early on his relationship with the woman who's not his biological mother, but becomes his mother to him,
mm-hmm.
and her basically looking for some kind of approval from her, and mm-hmm. then basically forcing the rest of the world to pay attention to him. So he's really, in the same way that Oscar is, he's one person in this place and somebody else out in the world. And you like that kind of division between these guys, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. I love showing that duality, and he is dealing with a lot of anger and frustration. And the film is very much about him coming to terms with some of it, him accepting certain things, and him finding an outlet for it. But it's a lot of, you know, a lot of similarities between the character of Oscar Grant and the character of Adonis Johnson. But at the same time, they're very, very different. You know,
first of all, this character is yours.
Yes,
you get to create a character really for the first time in the future.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's very true because Oscar was, you know, Oscar's obviously based on a real person. You know, with Adonis being completely.
You're talking about Oscar is the real life character. In Fruitvale Station.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and with Adonis, he is completely fictional. But at the same time, a lot of his characteristics, you know, I was able to kind of look inside of myself, look to Mike, you know what I mean, with Aaron coming to my co-writer, you know, we talked about a lot of these things. And for me, you know, the relationship that inspired me to want to make this movie, the relationship that inspired me to come up with this idea was my relationship with my father. And I'm a different person because of it. So I looked at that relationship and I said, man, what if I never had that? You know, what if my father was never there for whatever reason? I had so many friends who are like that. And I wonder what kind of person would that make me? And that was kind of where I started out with Adonis.
It's a treat when my guest, who has the regular name of Ryan Coogler, is the writer-director of Creed, his new film, which picks up the Rocky story in 2015, basically, with the son of Apollo Creed, who eventually ends up connecting with Rocky. It's interesting because, you know, so many, like in the first three films, basically, Rocky's the bad guys are the black fighters.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. It was interesting. It was one of those things that I asked my dad. I remember early on as a kid, I asked my dad, man, why are we rooting for this guy? Like, shouldn't we be rooting for Apollo?
Let me tell you, when I was growing up, everybody's rooting for Clubber Lang.
Yeah.
We were all down for Clubber Lang and for Apollo.
Yep. No, absolutely. And my father, he loved Apollo, too. And that was what was so cool about that. So cool about that character, man. You know, but he was Apollo was my favorite character, man. And my dad's favorite Rocky was Rocky II, and it's the one when Rocky, you know, first beats Apollo. You see a lot of Apollo in that movie. It's almost
you can see the connection between him and Adonis. These guys who never recover from a certain kind of injury.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I thought Apollo was just great, man. He was so complicated, and his character was all about honor and pride and dignity, and knowledge. He was smart. He was a keen businessman. You know, at the same time, he was this gifted athlete, seemed to be a deep family man. You know, it was great. It was great to know that he was inspired by Muhammad Ali as I got older. But, you know, my father's relationship with these movies stemmed from his relationship with his mom. You know, when he was 8 years old, his mom was diagnosed with terminal breast cancer. And they told her at our first hospital visit that, look, you're sick and you got probably about a year to live. And she ended up fighting the disease for another 10, living to the point where my dad was 18. She was the underdog in that story. You know, right before she succumbed to the disease, you know, she was bedridden for several months. And my father, all he could do with her was watch TV. That was the only activity that they could do. And at that time, Rocky II was kind of on repeat on network television, you know. So that was kind of what those films represented for him. He passed that on to us. And for me and my two little brothers, they represent my dad, you know. He got sick while I was getting ready to make Fruitvale, getting out of film school. And when I was seeing my father, who was this guy who was strong and fit and virile, when I would come home and see him becoming weak and needing help to do certain things, you know, it really damaged me mentally. And out of the questions that arose from that is how I came up with this idea of, you know, what if his hero, Rocky, went through the same thing? You know, what if there was this young man who was there that crushed their relationship? So that was how I came up with this idea.
See, what I think is really interesting about this, and I guess we really haven't had a chance to talk about this, Ryan, is that for me, it's about the relationship that we as people of color have with these mainstream films. Like, right. I was saying, when I was coming up, nobody really rooted for Rocky. I mean, you like, right, the movies, but you're like, no, Apollo is like 8 inches taller than he is. Yep. So you could always see, yep, he was crouched to get down to the same height. I'm sorry, Sly, I don't know him. But you could see that difference in them.
Right.
And when Clever Lang says, these guys who took real pride in being punishers,
right,
which was also, too, keeping you going, coming at that time, you know, basketball was still hadn't really blew up yet, right, and if you want to really like occupy the center of the culture, you were a boxer,
right?
And so these, right, guys were just really exciting figures. And so a lot of people would say, well, I want to do Rocky, but for you to take the black character and to sort of reclaim that, to me, is what, that's what black culture is about,
right?
Taking the person who's like on the outskirts and make, right, that person the hero.
Yeah, because we are that person that's on the outskirts so much. And that was kind of what I always related to as a consumer of pop culture. You know, I would often watch shows, and I would find myself wondering about the guy that was on the outskirts. You know, and it probably was because that's who I looked like. That's who I identified with. And so it was, you know, it was great, man, to take a look at Apollo's family. You know what I mean, and see how his death affected the people that he left behind.
Because I just found myself, you know, last night actually I watched Rocky II again.
Mm.
Just I wanted to go over there just to think, just that kind of sense of not being able to, like, needing to sort of prove himself is this thing that links, it's almost like this genetic thing that links Apollo, mm-hmm, and Adonis.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was a big question, like, for us is, you know, how much is Adonis like Apollo? Because how much can you be like somebody who you never met before? And it was like, okay, he's going to look like him, you know? He's going to look like him enough that when people realize who he is, it's like, oh, yeah, I should have seen that a long time ago, you know? But he couldn't be like Apollo, though, because Apollo, when you meet him, he's like 50-0 or something. You know what I'm saying? He's got this arrogance and this swagger and this confidence.
He's built himself into this figure,
right? And he's got no problem expressing himself. You know what I mean? He's very sure of who he is, which comes with a career of doing what you love to do and having agency over your own life. You know, Adonis doesn't have that, but he does have that same fire inside of him. You know what I mean? That same kind of drive.
And that same need to prove himself.
Yeah, like you know, in that competitive nature that you saw in, you know, that you saw in Apollo, you know, the eye of the tiger, as they called it, you know.
Yeah, because when I saw it, I almost felt like it's like, you know, growing up as the kid in hip hop and seeing all those black exploitation pictures and think it's, instead of thinking they're terrible, just thinking those are our heroes.
Right.
And for us, you know, Apollo Creed's a hero.
Big time. He was a big time hero, man. And in the hip hop culture, like people underestimate how big these stories are in the hip hop culture, how big Rocky is, how big Apollo Creed is, man. Like, and you still hear him referenced. You know what I mean? Like, I was listening to Pusha T's last album, and he had a song with Kendrick Lamar called Nostalgia, and he's quoting lines about, you know, about Apollo Creed and about Rocky, and you can go back to the song Victory, which came out on No Way Out right after Biggie died, and they rapping over going the distance. You know, it's just really strong cultural tie to these films, to our culture, the street culture, the hip-hop culture, you know, if we feel like it belongs to us.
That's why, I mean, because it really is that, isn't it? The same way that we have to claim these things that are sort of put off as these guys who are like villains or oppositional forces. But for us, they're our connection to the mainstream.
Man, we have to, man. And we identify with this. We identify with their stories, being on the outside looking. You know, like, it's a reason that, you know, Scarface, you know, is claimed by so many hip-hop artists. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many hip-hop artists are named after Scarface? You know, you got
besides Shaq? We'll take a break. My guest is Ryan Coogler. His new film is by the director, is Creed. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
J. Jump into a new mode of music discovery with the KCRW Music Mine. It's our first iPad app dedicated entirely to music exploration. The Music Mine brings you an interactive experience with a constantly evolving galaxy of audio, video, and photos. Discover by artist, by DJ, or by song, and easily share the music you love with friends. The KCRW Music Mine. Dig into it on your iPad. More info at kcrw.com.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest, name check, Shaquille O'Neal, is a rapper actor before the break, is Ryan Coogler. His new film as writer-director is Creed. But, I mean, I do love that. And I know you a little bit, and I know a lot of the conversations we've had are kind of about that. And it's interesting now that, and it probably took this long, almost 40 years, for Apollo Creed to really get his due in the mainstream, for us, for people like you and me, it's very different.
Right.
Because we always had ownership over that. You're talking about agency. That was our agency in the culture.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's a question that people often ask me, man. Like when I'm doing press, man, did you feel all that pressure, man? Like taking over this franchise and having this stuff on your shoulders. And like for me, it was like I came up at a time where, you know, I was born after Rocky IV. Like Rocky was like, it belonged to us. It was like public domain at that point of me, you know, growing up. And it was so personal to my, you know, it meant so much to my dad. It meant so much to us that I was, like, more worried about letting my dad down. You know, I was more worried about making something that my dad would say, man, that sucked, you know, than, you know, putting the franchise in a bad place. But in making this film, it was a lot of art imitating life, life imitating art. And that, you know, you had me, you had Michael, Tessa, you know, Aaron coming to my co-writer. You know, we had all these millennials, you know what I mean? Like in work, we were working hand in hand with Sly and Erwin Winkler and Bob Chartoff, you know what I mean? Like with the old guard.
The original triumvirate.
These baby boomers, you know what I mean? And the film is that, you know, it's in the music. You got classical music handing off to hip hop, you know what I mean? In a way that has to work. You know, Sly and Michael handing off to each other in a way that, you know, that has to work. And it's very much in the city, man. The city of Philadelphia was very much like the old meeting the new. You know, you got the city that was like, you know, built in like the 1700s. You know what I'm saying? These old buildings and it's all the, you know, the Declaration of Independence and the Liberty Bell sitting right there, you know, while people are hopping in and out of Ubers, you know, right next to it. So you know, the film was very much about the old meeting the new and contrasting each other, but at the same time working in harmony.
Yeah, because I guess one of the things I wonder about it too was, and I was going to ask you about that, because one of the things that's really big in this movie, I can see you had a chance to really stretch out with it, was the way you use sound. Mm. I mean, especially the sound, not of the fights, but just, I'm just so aware of the way people are breathing, the way Adonis breathes versus the way we hear Rocky breathe.
Right.
But even the way we hear Adonis's girl breathe. I mean, that breathing soundtrack, you can hear it. And the sort of exhaustion and Felicia Rashad and sort of the anger.
Yes, that's interesting.
That's really, I just thought it was really interesting.
I think we had great, you know, obviously we worked with Skywalker Sound, Steve Boddicker. One of our supervisors was Benny Burt, who's Ben Burt's son. And he's my age.
We should say Ben Burt is basically the guy who made the first three.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call them. The Star Wars films from the 70s.
I think it's 4, 5, and 6, right?
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are. And he was the guy that went out and recorded the power lines and like invented the lightsaber sound. And him and Benny are really close. And, you know, it's a father-son story. And he came and watched it with, you know, he came and watched it with his son who was working on it. And afterwards he said, hey, man, you know, the first movie I ever did sound on, Sly was in it. And I say, wait, what? It's Ben Burt. And he says, yeah, the first movie I ever did sound on was called Death Race 2000.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But he only has a few lines in it.
Yeah. He said he was like a Machine Gun Joe or something like that. And he said that was how he met. He said, that's how I met Sly. So it's crazy that my son is supervising this movie. You know, but we work with really great guys, man. Brandon Proctor was our dialogue mixer. And it was a big thing because it's a crazy action movie with all these crazy sounds, but it's also we had to make it work as an intimate domestic drama.
Well, that's what it is first and foremost, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, it's definitely a domestic drama first and foremost, man. And it's about guys in bedrooms. It's about people in bedrooms and locker rooms, you know, hospital rooms. You know what I mean? And that's really where most of the movie takes place.
Which, by the way, which Rocky II is as well. There aren't a lot of fights in Rocky II.
The funny thing about the Rocky template is it's usually just two fights. You know, like the first one, he fights in a bar, basically, and then he fights Apollo at the end. And it's a lot of movie in between there. You know what I mean?
That's why it got Oscar nominations for screenplay and actor. And John Avildsen won for best director.
It's such a beautiful work of art.
What's I found really interesting about the movie, too, and I just wonder how much you picked up from the Rocky films, is those films so often about people not being able to communicate with each other.
Right. Yeah, for sure, man. I absolutely. I mean, that was a big inspiration there. And I think that it was a cultural thing, too, man. Like, because these characters were all from the same neighborhood, right? And as far as Rocky, it was a culture there. It was a
South Philly culture.
You know what I mean? That Italian-American machismo and guys in bars, you know, hey, man, hook me up with a job on the docks, that kind of vibe, you know what I mean? And Rocky was a guy who wore his heart on his sleeve. And Adrian was so nervous and strange around people because she was the same way. You know, and it was about them kind of finding a way for them to be able to reveal themselves to each other, you know, in this place where vulnerability doesn't get you very far. And with our Philadelphia that we're looking at a different culture, man. We mostly in North Philly, you know, we mostly amongst black folks in Philly in this movie, you know, which is a different thing. And with Adonis coming from Los Angeles, you know, as soon as he's out there, they start calling him Hollywood. You know what I'm saying? They know he's not from around there, you know, and his relationship with Bianca, you know, is much different from the relationship with Rocky and Adrian. You know, Bianca's very sure of who she is and very forward, very East Coast, almost to the point of being abrasive to Adonis. You know, when they first meet.
I like you when you call facing. It's almost no, it's not almost, but it's interesting because even that relationship between Bianca and Adonis is really about lack of communication, which I don't want to give anything away, but it becomes something that's very much about how he's not communicating with her.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's very much about, you know, what it means to be a man, right? You know, because we kind of constantly struggling with how much do we share, how much do we show, you know, especially when you're a black man.
And are you dealing with the idea of the public image where the black man is, and how do you fit into that?
Absolutely. And it's something that you always wear on your shoulders, you know what I mean?
Yeah, how hard are you? I mean, that's what comes
out. Oh, yeah, exactly.
I'm like,
do I got to show you right quick?
My guest who's about to flex and show me how hard he is Ryan Coogler, whose new film is writer and director. It's Creed. It's the treatment. Please, Hammer, please don't hurt me. I know where you're from.
Oh, no, man.
You're from an okay, please, don't hurt me.
I'm not trying to play with Detroit in here neither, though, man. Come on.
Don't make me go for my strap. Don't make me violate up in here. All these things, and this comes from you being a student of film in the way that you are, all these film things we're talking about are all subtext. It's finally a really powerful drama with fight sequences that move the story across as well. I mean, you had to make sure that the fights actually worked as story points.
Oh,
and not
absolutely.
Just fights.
Absolutely. It was important to us, man, and it was a big collaboration, man, with me and the actors and with our cinematographer, our stunt coordinator, Clayton Barber. And because Adonis fights so much, we meet him fighting. You know, we meet him when he's a kid fighting. He has several fights leading up to the fight that's at the end of the film. And because all of them are there, we really were hard on ourselves and saying, like, hey, what does this fight mean to the story? Because it can't just be two guys hitting each other. You know what I mean? It has to mean something for the character. And he has to grow. He has to come into this fight one way, come out of it another way as a person. You know, one of the fight scenes we filmed in a single take, which is the first fight that Adonis has professionally in Philadelphia, and for us, you know, that fight was very special to me because it was the first time that Adonis had a trainer. You know, it's the first time he's got somebody in his corner. But what's ironic about boxing is, you know, even when you got somebody great in your corner, they still have to leave you on your own.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You're literally, you have no teammate, you have nobody else you can turn to who can pick up the slack. You on your own in a ring with somebody who's trying to knock your head off. You know, you can hear your trainer kind of on the outside sometimes, you know what I mean? But it's really just you in there. It's just incredible microcosm for life. And then if you are fortunate enough to make it through that round, you get to see your trainer again for a little bit. You know, so this idea of being left and then coming back and this idea of getting your dream to the point that you have no more excuses and you have everything at stake now. I'm sure you know what that's like when you say, hey, I want to be a film critic. I want to be a writer. I want to do this thing. And then somebody says, okay, you up. You know what I'm saying? They give you a salary. They say, all right, Elvis, man, give me your first piece of criticism. How nervous were you at that point?
This isn't about me. Don't try to turn this around.
I'm just asking, though.
No, I was never nervous about this. I was ready to go.
He's ready to rock.
Like you.
Oh, no.
Like you.
I was.
Were you nervous the first time you got up into shoot?
Crazy nervous. Man, I still am every day. Like,
yeah?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, because...
What was it like your first day shooting with Stallone then, if we're going to talk about nervous?
It was that day. It was that day we did The Wonder.
Okay. Oh,
man. That was the first day he came to set. We had shot 2 days with Mike beforehand, and then that third day we had that one take, And then he came to set, and I had forgotten the impact of him showing up as that character in Philadelphia with 300 extras. You know, I was running around trying to, and as soon as he came to set, I'm like, all right, Sly, so you're gonna stand right here, and then we're gonna come in. He's like, all right, cool. Next thing I know, it's just this crazy uproar of people chanting Rocky, 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 Rocky. And I didn't even know what it was. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, what's everybody talking about right now? You know what I mean? But then I realized, oh yeah, he's back. You know what I mean? This is Sly back as Rocky, first day back on set. A bunch of real Philadelphia fight fans as extras, and they just went ballistic for like 10 minutes.
So talk about your first day shooting Fruitvale Station as compared to your first day shooting on this.
Well, my first day shooting Fruitvale was really intense, man. Like, we were shooting in my old neighborhood in North Oakland. I remember showing my AD drove me to set, and he said, "Hey man, we're gonna drive to base camp first, and then I'm gonna drive you over to holding." My answers to those questions was, "What's base camp and what's holding?" And I never had one. Didn't know what those two things meant. It was my first day of shooting, and so I was incredibly nervous, man.
And what was your first day like shooting on Creed?
First day on Creed was I knew what a base camp was. You know,
so you learned something from the first one.
Yeah, we were shooting in Philadelphia, but we were shooting Philly for Los Angeles. It was the scene between Wood Harris and Mike when Adonis walks into his father's old gym, the gym that's named after his father, and wants to be trained. You know, finally wants to be able to work out there, and he gets rejected, you know, by Wood Harris, who's playing Duke's son, you know, who's playing Apollo Trainer's son.
The son of Tony Burton.
Son of Tony Burton. And you know, that day was intense, man. It was snowing like crazy outside. You know, we were in this gym that we had to, you know, we basically got a store space that was next to a 7-Eleven in Port Richmond in Philadelphia. And we, you know, we set up shop. I had a great production designer, Hannah Beekler, who turned it into this, you know, new age Los Angeles gym. And we kind of wanted it to look like Wild Card Gym, which is Freddie Roach and Manny Pacquiao's gym here in Los Angeles. So we kind of used that as a template, and they had these beautiful flags hanging in the windows. So we blew out the windows, got some cool flags in there. You know, got the my fiance's mom is from the Philippines. You know, her pops is black from Chicago, but we got the Filipino flag in there for my mother-in-law. You know, and Pacquiao. You know, got some cool. You know, and then we got the American flag in there for Apollo. You know, and then we shot it, and Wood and Mike just brought it like crazy. It was so much fun.
Before we go on, I ask you quickly. The first time you showed the movie to an audience, what were you nervous about that when you showed Creed for the first time?
Yeah, I was really nervous. You know, because these movies, man, boxing movies are really like the most, in many ways, they're the most audience-friendly movies you can have.
And when they don't, when they don't work, you can feel it.
So I was really nervous, man. I worried if because this is the kind of movie that you want audience participation, right? You want to feel people laugh. You want to feel people wince when the character's getting punched. You want to feel people, you know, excited during the fight. So I just remember, I didn't watch the screen. I watched the crowd, you know, and it was real small screening, man. It was at Samuel Goldwyn Studios, like in Hollywood. It was a little small test screen, like 100 people, I think. And it was pulling from Hollywood area, so it was like 100 film types, you know. So I was like, you know, real nervous and, you know, kind of attentive to the room, trying to figure out what was working, what wasn't working. But it was incredibly exciting.
So it was a movie. I can't thank you enough, Ryan, for doing this. Thank you so much.
All right, Elvis, it's so great to be with you, man.
Hey, we're out of time. My guest, who still has a regular name, is Ryan Coogler, whose new film as writer and director is Creed. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Marcia Caldwell. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by associate producer Blake Veit. My name is Elvis Mitchell. I'm very sorry. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.